Welcome back to The Money Show, one of my favorite features here on the show, How I Make My Money. This time chatting to Sam Tech Girl, right, an esports shoutcaster and influencer as well, digging into her pockets tonight to find out how she makes her money. Sam, welcome to The Money Show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Now, usually when parents see, you know, their teenage kids wrapped up in a room for hours playing esports, playing games, not wanting to be interrupted, they'd be quite, strict to say, no, look, you need to let go of these esports gaming things. You need to let go of this console and go outside and make a real living. But one can quite make a lot of money from esports, can't they?
They definitely can. And I mean, my mom was one of them. I think I was doing this job for a good 2 years, being flown overseas, everything paid for and being paid. And she kept saying to me, when are you going to start looking at getting a real job again? So I completely get the fear, because it is games, right? I mean, it's a bit like watching Netflix. It's an entertainment thing. But when it comes to certain games, they're very competitive and there is a lot of money on the line. I think just recently, a couple of weeks ago, we had the first ever CS2 major. CS2 is a game, Counter-Strike. It's the newest iteration of Counter-Strike. The prize pool for that was, if I'm not mistaken, $1.2 million, 16 teams fighting for a share of that. So you can make some really good money if you're extremely good at playing the game.
I imagine you also started off, picking up a console yourself. What was your favorite game back then as a young lady?
So my dad was a giant nerd, so we didn't have a console. We actually had a PC. So I learned to game on a PC. But the first game that I remember playing, which is probably not a good indication of his parenting, was Mortal Kombat 3. And he actually showed us at the time. The internet was kind of new in those days, but he, and I've still looked back and wonder if he should have let his young daughter do this, but he showed me how to go into forums and how I could get certain codes and put them into the game so I could get cheats for Mortal Kombat. And it ended up, there's a game called The Sims, which was more age appropriate, but I found these forums where they gave you codes and you could actually mod the codes of the game so that I could have like the members of the Spice Girls in The Sims as well. So in a weird way, him allowing me to play games on the PC actually taught me some like basic coding as well. So I always try and use that as an example that there is, gaming can be worthwhile. You can actually learn stuff from it as well.
And to be clear to our listeners who are not familiar with gaming speak, mod is to modify, right?
Yeah, it's to modify. So you change the code of the game so that, for example, you could, in Mortal Kombat, if you wanted to, so there were cheats that you could use and coding and some codes that you could put in where you could turn your little characters into tiny babies. It's called a baby fatality. So you would turn the person you were fighting into a baby and then kill them, but I mean, the ethics of it is questionable, but you could do stuff like that. So I'm really selling sports as like esports as a professional way to make money right now talking about this, but there you go.
No, those are the intricacies that come with the space. I mean, I guess you had quite a great mentor in your dad, but at what point do you decide, I'm not going to be a doctor, I'm not going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be somebody that's in the gaming world. This is what I really love to do and I'd like to make money from it.
So I think for me, it wasn't really, that path didn't happen. I mean, I kind of in high school stopped playing games as much as I'd like, because obviously at the time everyone was, you know, there was a stigma around playing games. You were a nerd, you were weird. So sort of stopped it and then got back into it, but didn't really talk about it when I was in university. It wasn't something I wanted people to know because I felt a little bit judged. And then kind of as time progressed, I mean, I got 2 degrees. I was studying at journalism and then I went and I ended up working in corporates. And it was while there that I just started using social media really just to talk about my love for technology and then games, and then proceeded to start talking about competitive gaming because my brother was quite a good South African player. And at that stage, esports had kind of blown up overseas. It had become this big business, not nearly as big as what it is now, but at the time it was really impressive. And I started using social media to highlight some of the esports stars that we had in South Africa who weren't getting the same opportunities. And again, it was one of these things where people started getting me to come on stage and give me a mic and commentate. And I was just doing it because I was getting free entry into events and that was cool. And I got to hang out with my friends and talk about games. And then all of a sudden, people were paying me, and then suddenly, and I was laughing because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but you're giving me money to commentate, so I'll take the money. And then someone from overseas came and said, hey, like, we can actually, we could find you work in a much bigger pool. And next thing, I was being flown overseas, and then I was quitting my job because I couldn't take so much leave to go and do jobs overseas. So this actually, for me personally, wasn't a career choice. It was something that just kind of happened, and now it is my full-time job. But I think a lot of people I know, especially the younger generation, because esports is more established now, it is, it's an actual decision. They choose what they study at university in the hope that it can help aid them in a career in this, because it's not just commentating. You can obviously play professionally, you can manage teams, you can run the marketing for those teams, you can run an organization, you can get into the production of these shows, the administration behind the scenes of the actual tournament. There are so many job opportunities that now exist.
What made you take the leap then? Because you're getting, probably a sizable amount from a corporate. You've got a certain amount coming in as a salary every month. And yes, you are commentating at your favorite esports events, but to then shift away from that certain world to a world you didn't know could sustain you, at what point do you make that decision?
So, I mean, I think my dad, which we mentioned, like as a mentor, I'd like to think that he taught me some things. And so what he had taught me for a long time is obviously to save. And when I made the decision to quit my corporate job, I knew that I had 3 months worth of savings available to me. And I kind of thought, well, I'm going to take a chance at this, the commentating side and the content creation side. And if in 3 months, actually it wasn't 3 months, I said, if in 2 months I'm still dipping into my savings, then I've got to go find a job. Because obviously, the longer you're out of the corporate world, there's always like a stigma that you won't be able to find anything. And within the first month, I was able to cover my expenses without having to pull my savings. And by the third month, I was like, hold on, I can actually make this work. I've got to work really hard, and I had to change the way I lived in some respects, but I can, this is something that I could do. And that was kind of where the decision came from. Was originally it was a, I will take the 3 months. But if that doesn't work, then I'll go straight back. I always, and I say this to a lot of people who are interested in getting into this, or people that really want to compete, because competing and playing professionally is very stressful. It's exactly like rugby. Some people are good enough, some people, most people aren't. I always say you need to have a backup plan. I think I was lucky because I had a tertiary education and I'd had a corporate job. So I knew that I had a CV if needed to kind of go out and find a place again if it didn't pan out.
And what is the making of an esports shoutcast? I mean, is it the same as you would have maybe a rugby pundit or a soccer commentator or an analyst?
It's pretty much the same. It is exactly the same. I think that the difference is that you need to understand how a game changes. So something that you have all the same features that you would if you were commentating on soccer, like you said, or rugby, exactly like what you see when you're watching your games. That's what we do, and it's the exact same style of broadcast. The difference is that football, the rules of football haven't changed for a very long time. It's pretty much how it started, is how football is played. Games change all the time. They make tweaks to them. They add new things to it. They change maps. Sometimes they remove certain things from a game and add something new. So you've got to consistently be up to date with those things changing and understanding how the dynamics of changing the game will ultimately affect those playing it, and understanding at the top level the style of play that you're seeing from certain players, how those changes will impact them. So you do have to be a little bit more hands-on with the game itself, and understand what changes are happening versus something like football or rugby, where I think the rules will always be the same for the most part. But it is pretty much like any broadcast job. You need the same set of skills, if you like. But I do also think that you have to have an extreme love for the game that you're commentating on, because games are, I mean, a Counter-Strike match can last anything between 2 to like 4.5 hours. So you got to be dedicated to being in there and doing that. And our broadcast days can go anything again from like 6 hours all the way through to like 14, 15-hour days. So I think there's a level of love that has to come into it as well.
Athletes, top CEOs will tell you about the 10 hours that they've put into their craft, musicians at perfecting their craft. In terms of gaming, just how much time do you need to put into it? You know, how much seriousness do you need to put into it in order to make sure that you're one of the top players or some of the top analysts in the sector?
This question is so tough because I know players that are so naturally gifted at I'll give you an example. I know a FIFA player in South Africa who's so damn good. And I know that the whole way through school, he didn't play in the week. He only played, I think, for 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday and then 4 or 5 hours on a Sunday because that's all he was allowed to play. But he was one of the best in the world. And then on the other side, I can tell you about international players who are clocking 8 hour workdays. A lot of them are part of professional organizations. They're paid a salary. They are expected to be online playing for 8 hours a day. They work with performance coaches and psychologists and nutritionists, and they're constantly working at perfecting their craft, and they sit in coaching clinics, if you like, and playing with their teammates, not in the same way you or I would play games. So they're not just like picking up the controller and jamming for 8 hours. Like, they will sit and study past games that they've played, discuss new strategies and things like that, but it'll be a full 8 hour day. Some kids will, that are coming up, that want to be picked up by one of these organizations, you'll see them, they'll be playing for 11, 12 hours a day trying to get noticed. So it completely comes down to whether you have the natural skill or whether you want to put the time in. But I do think, like any other sport, and I know that I wouldn't say gaming is a sport, but it is similar in the sense that some people are just really good. There's a lot of concentration
that comes with it as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and some people are just really naturally good. There are guys that are 16, 17 right now that are just incredibly naturally talented. And then some people say, I want to be a professional gamer, and they play every day and they just never get to that level. So it is a difficult one, but I think, like anything, the more time you put into something, the better you're going to be at it, right?
All right. In conversation with Sam Tech Girl, right? Esports shoutcaster and influencer, telling us about the world of gaming. And well, there's money there too, and she's making quite a bit of it. We'll catch up with her after this.
You're with Motheo Faribe on 702 and Cape Talk.
And we're talking how I make my money tonight, joined by Sam Tech Girl, right? Esports shoutcaster and influencer as well, telling us about the world of gaming. Now, the market of gaming, according to Statista.com, is at 1.7 billion last year. That's quite a bit of money, Sam, going into this particular sector. How is the South African sector compared to the rest of the world? Are we paying the same? Are there enough talents to ship out to the rest of the world?
So the short answer is no. I think it's a little bit behind, and there's various socioeconomic reasons for that. Obviously, we have an access to technology, and that I think lacks slightly. And obviously, we have a huge connectivity issue. So we're a little bit behind. For example, I could not do what I do full time if I did it only in South Africa. The majority of my work is based overseas, primarily in Europe, and I wouldn't be able to do this as a full-time job here. There just isn't enough of an infrastructure. Saying that, when I started, I was doing it in South Africa, and there was no money. Everyone was a volunteer. When we used to put on these shows, there was money for the players. Sometimes it wasn't money. Sometimes it was just gear that they would win. But everyone working, from the one cameraman to the commentators, we were doing it for free because we loved it. So there is a definite improvement, because I do know now that people are paid. I think that they're paid reasonably well, considering the experience that they have. And so you can start to build something. Also, we now have dedicated esports companies in South Africa. I think there's two that focus specifically on running events and doing broadcasts. So they're hiring people as well. So it's growing. It's just taking a little bit longer. If you look at those big numbers that you were mentioning, or the stadiums that are getting filled in Europe, we don't have that just yet.
And then, what's it like walking into a bank and telling them that you're into esports, you are a gamer yourself, and this is the industry you're in? You'd like to get funding either to, you know, get assets or maybe start a business. You know, what's the treatment from some of the bankers?
So this is it's a weird one, because obviously, I mean, they look at me like I'm insane. It's really difficult to explain what I do to a lot of people, and they find it. I normally just go with, oh, I'm like a TV presenter. And I mean, even that, it's not really, explaining what I do, but I do struggle because I think that I've been able to do quite well for myself. I obviously predominantly earn US dollars and pounds, and I have considerable savings. But if I, for example, want to get, you know, money for, say, a bond, or if I want to, when I'm financing a vehicle, or if I wanted to get money to start a business, I'm automatically seen as a very high risk, which I get because I live a freelance type of life. Obviously, my jobs are not guaranteed every year, but it is weird to me that I can have quite a considerable amount of money to be able to say, hey, look, this is what I'm going to put down as the deposit, and I'd still be seen as high risk. However, I think that's just the nature of the business that I'm in. And it's a difficult one because, like I said, sometimes I don't even waste my time trying to explain what I do. I just say I'm in TV, or I'm a TV presenter, because I know that the moment I try and explain what I do, there's just no legitimacy to it. People are like, well, what do you mean you just play games all day? I mean, that's kind of what they presume I'm doing, right?
So you've been part, of course, in making sure that there's a formal structure in the e-gaming space in South Africa. I mean, you were there before the industry even paid out anything. Have sponsors also jumped on? Has computer makers or some of the consoles that make some of these games come on to sort of support it and make sure that those that are interested in it can make a living?
They have. And that's what's so cool, because when, like I said, when I started, we did it for free. Now people get paid, and we fought hard for that. I know it sounds ridiculous, but there was a small group of us who fought really hard to say, hey, if you're going to have people working for you all day on this broadcast, like, you should probably pay them and also maybe give them lunch and some bottles of water. Always nice. So like, I like the fact that now when I go to like a Comic Con or a Rage, I see people and they, you know, they have a makeup artist and they have like all the support that they should have to do their job better. There's also been a huge increase in big brands coming in, not just the endemic brands. So not just your PC manufacturers and your peripheral partners, but we've also seen like a lot of mainstream brands get super involved. In South Africa, you've got the likes of Doritos has got involved, a lot of the telecommunications companies. Overseas though, I mean, I love the fact that like Audi, Mercedes, Benz, they're all in the mix now. You get to see them. Even the US Air Force sponsors esports events now as a way to try, I think, get people to sign up. But we have a lot of these like mainstream sponsors, a lot of drinks companies, clothing brands as well. Gucci's just done a huge thing. So I think that a lot of corporate South Africa and corporates globally have seen the value, because you have a very dedicated viewer and fan who's going to sit for 8 to 12 hours watching their favorite players compete in these games. And they're a guaranteed audience because it's live on the internet. And you can market to them, and they have the money to spend on your products because they can afford to set themselves up with a console and a PC and play games. So it's a very lucrative business and a very dedicated fan group that's watching it, which is why I think more and more businesses are getting involved. And I get really excited because I've seen it in South Africa, and I think it's growing much faster than a lot of people thought it would, which is always a good thing, because I would like to predominantly work at home if I could.
Yeah, not traveling as much. Okay, so these days you caught on stage at some of these tournaments, but also creating content and influencer content as well that's got to do with esports. But do you still pick up a console? Do you still sit in front of the gaming computer to play some of your favorite games?
Someone asked me this the other day. So in the beginning of January, I think between the middle of November and like the end of Feb, I'd only been home for like a week and a half. I'd been on the road with work. And someone said to me, what are you playing? And I just laughed. I was like, I haven't actually played a game in months. But I've been home for a little bit, so I am still playing. I am trying to get good at Counter-Strike, because even though I commentated and I host a lot of events, I'm absolutely horrifically bad at it. So I've been spending a lot of my evenings playing some CS2. And then I've also got, I actually have two consoles as well. So I jump on there sometimes. I love the new Mortal Kombat came out, and I think I finished it in a day. The story mode, it is quite short though, just because Mortal Kombat will always like have all those great memories for me. So I do try and jump on and play where I can. It's not as much as I'd like anymore when I'm at work, but when I have downtime, the goal is to try play some more.
All right, that was Sam Tech Girl, right? Esports shoutcaster and influencer, talking to us about esports and the world of gaming, how lucrative it can be if you're really good at playing at it. And thank you so much for joining us for that particular conversation.